Welcome to our Memories of School series as part of the Bowden Education podcast. In these podcasts, we'll be asking people to think back to their school days and the memories, both good and bad, that they have. In this edition of Memories of School, I'm speaking to Nicola Owen. Nicola is a previous primary school teacher and has 20 years of classroom experience. She's also a mum of two teenage boys and more recently the director of Zenic Wellbeing Limited. During her teaching career, Nicola successfully coordinated the pastoral care side of the curriculum, taking the lead in RE, PSHE, PE, and mental health and wellbeing. Her child-centred approach sees her train and work with children, young adults, parents, teachers, senior leaders, and outside agencies that support children and young adults within their role, such as social workers. Nicola firmly believes that in supporting others with their well-being, everyone can then in turn help to support to become happy learners. And through Zenic Wellbeing, Nick offers a whole range of creative workshops and educational programs to help give people the tools to support positive mental health and well-being, and so important at these times right now. So welcome, Nicola, and thank you for joining us. And I hope you're ready to go back to school.
I am, yes, thank you.
So let's take you right back. So thinking back to your school days, are there any particular memories that stand out for you?
Well, yes, because when I think about this, and I think about my primary education, primary school for me nothing really stands out apart from one particular teacher who, if I really think about it, I think I idolised her. She was this wonderful, happy, kind, really full of energy, and really put a lot of enthusiasm into her teaching. It sounds like I'm critiquing my old primary school teacher. But Mrs. O'Brien, she was my junior one teacher, so equivalent to year three now. And I remember we had we were looking at Native American Indians, and I remember this one session she'd got this teepee in the hall, and we were all squaws and warriors, and we made all these shields and tomahawks, and it was just amazing. We had this giant totem pole as well, and we had like full dress up day, and her lessons and her what she brought to the lessons, I think, just really engaged me as a learner, and I felt really valued in her class, and I don't think I ever experienced that in any other class in primary school. I was always sort of like middle of the row. I was never the child that needed any extra support or had any behaviour issues. And I certainly wasn't the highest flying. So I never got pulled out to do extras, and I never got pulled out because I wasn't complying or behaving in the right way. I was just the one that sat and just got on with it. And I think on reflection of that, when I became a teacher, I was very conscious of those children in the class. I always joke with I can't joke anymore because I'm no longer in the classroom in that sense, but my year sixes, the ones that used to struggle with maths, I wasn't the most wonderful at maths at school, and I was very honest with my class when I was teaching, and said, you know, I wasn't great at maths. And I used to say that I used to do David Ingham maths. Now I can quote him because I am friends with him even still now. He was like the magic mathematician. He was so clever at maths. And I was sat next to him in the year six class, so junior four. And I remember him actually teaching me all the methods. We used to go through the peak maths books. And he would be my teacher really in year six for maths. And he sort of like guided me and helped me. So I wasn't really taught maths by my year six teacher. Which is quite ironic, really. So I always joke with the children that I did David Ingham maths, that he was my peer support, he was my peer teacher, and they didn't understand that. And when I talked to them about how I struggled, they sort of like, they got it. And they said, well, he was really quite kind. I said, well, he was. I said, he was ruthless. He got a little bit annoyed when I didn't get things. But he... So David Ingham and Mrs. O'Brien were my primary school education. It's quite frightening.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying, that there is this kind of fairly beige, if you like, invisible middle, that you do everything on time, you're always there, you always sit nicely on the carpet in primary school, or you're compliant in your lessons in secondary school, you're not brilliant, so you're never called out to be, you know, patted on the back or celebrated in assembly, you're compliant, so you're never hauled out to go and be dealt with by anybody, and you don't need any extra support, so you just plod along. And I was exactly one of those, and I actually think, well, pretty sure that some of the teachers didn't even barely know my name.
I think the only reason they knew who I was my mum and dad were visible on the PTA. And I think when I was about 10, my dad got into local politics and he became the local councillor. So again, that was another little what they knew me for. I was good at sport. Mrs. O'Brien took the sport. So again, I was, you know, I was in the netball team, I was in the rounders team, but I wasn't the centre, and I certainly wasn't the hardest hitter, and I wasn't the fastest runner. You know, there is that sense of the middle of the row, the ghost, if you like, of the classroom.
And you just get through it, and it's quite uneventful.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I don't know, I mean, when I got to secondary school, that's when things really changed for me. And I know we've talked in the past about our children and knowing what direction they wanted to go in. And I think when lots of doors opened for me when I started secondary school, and I felt that I just wanted to take it all in. I wanted to experience everything. And my parents always had that instilling in me that, you know, education is key, and you've got to try your best and do your best with what you've been given. And I think when I hit secondary school, I don't know, and I talk about this with my transition work, when the year six is moving up into year seven, it's like a new birth, and it's an opportunity to say, this is me. And I really took that on board, and I didn't really care what other people thought at that point of if I was handing my homework in on time, if I was doing that little bit extra, you know, going above and beyond what's being asked of me, and then being praised for it. I actually soaked it all up, and I gave that little bit more, which I tried to do at primary school. I remember in primary school I was doing a topic, we got given a country, and I remember I got India, and I remember raiding my dad's curry spice cupboard and putting them all in making little bags and putting them all and sticking them onto like odd shaped pieces of paper and writing about what I'd found out. And I really took a lot of pride in handing it in. And I think the comment was, can you make sure that that you report your work on the same size piece of paper? Not that, well done, you've done really well. It was the comment on presentation. And I thought, wow, I really put my effort in. But when I got to secondary school, I remember I loved my form tutor, Mrs. Med, and it was coming up to Christmas time, and I was in year one, so they called it year one, it was like 1P1, and so it was like the first year, and myself and Paul Felton, another friend of mine, I keep quoting these boys that were dead brainy and dead clever, but Paul was my nemesis. We sort of like had battles over how many team points we got and house points and who was going to be, you know, the smartest and who was going to get the highest scores. So he was like my the one that I wanted to compete with. So I was, you know, conscious that I was trying to outdo Paul Felton all the time. And I remember Mrs. Med, she was so kind. She was a food tech teacher at school as well. And it was coming up to Christmas, and I just said to my dad, I said, Dad, I'd like to do something for Mrs. Med. And he was like, well, what are you thinking? I said, well, I think something like a calendar. So, because she's always forgetting things. I said, she'd night, you know. He went, right, okay. So I made this calendar on the computer. So my dad had invested in this computer, and we printed it off, and it was all done. And I made it for him, bound it and everything, and wrapped it, took great pride in taking it into school and saying thank you to her and hope that she had a lovely Christmas. And she was that impressed with it. She went to the head teacher, who was then super impressed that I'd created this wonderful calendar, so much so that he had it reproduced and sent it out to all the local libraries.
Is that your moment of fame?
Like, wow, this was produced by Nicola Dennis then. That was my maiden name, Nicola Dennis, 1P1. And this is a gift to her form tutor, but we thought we'd share it with you. And it was like this lovely thing and all these like really blocky graphics. Hilarious. So I was going into the libraries to do all my studying and my calendar was on the receptionist little thing. It's hilarious. But yeah, I just felt that at secondary school I found my niche and found that I was valued that little bit more. So yeah, I think and then I found the drama department, which was like I loved sport and I loved drama. In the drama department, I remember we were doing Oliver and I was in the school choir, and I remember the drama teacher, she was called Nikki Marriott. She spotted me in the choir and I was singing my little heart out, and she needed somebody to do it. This was the Christmas production, I think it was, and she wanted someone to mime some sort of sequence. So she plucked me out of the choir and I was dressed in a nightie on the night, and I was this little girl that was waking up at Christmas morning to reiterate the story that the choir were singing. And I don't know, she sort of like took me under her wing, and I was the understudy for Oliver. I was going to be playing Oliver Twist if Craig fell out. It was like, okay. But yeah, I loved it. I loved being in the drama department. It's like a big family. And that was my time to shine, really. And I really enjoyed it. And then my teacher, Mrs. Marriott, she left. She went off to have a baby and moved. So she didn't come back. And our new drama teacher, Mr. Davis, arrived. And he was like this 6-foot ginger man that was just really tall and quite scary looking. And I just flourished under him. Took GCSE drama. We did shows, Coming Out of Your Ears. We took things on the road. We went on a road trip performing certain things. Went to Derby, performing at Derby High School, which was his old school, so we did a bit of a performance there. And I actually had an audition for RADA through Mr. Davis.
Really?
So I think secondary school was where I found what I wanted to do, which I wanted to be a drama teacher. And I left school and went on to college, doing my A-levels, did theatre studies, English Lit, psychology, in my very first college. And I think there's that progression, isn't there, of school, that this is what you do next, this is the next rung of the ladder, this is where we're taking it. And it was at sixth form that I pressed pause on what I was going to do. I loved my theatre studies course, I loved my psychology course, and I loved my English course. My drama teacher was a bit flaky, for want of a better word, and there was a lot of racial tension in my college. I remember seeing fights amongst friends of mine that because of the skin colour, a lot of the time it was, you know, the language that was used, and there was the groups of white boys that would go around and groups of Asian boys that would go around, and there would be conflict all the time. And I just felt that it wasn't a productive place to be, and I felt quite fearful. So much so that I had a conversation with the head teacher. I booked an appointment with him.
That's a brave thing to do at that age, actually, isn't it?
Yeah,
because that's something many people do. Spend your life avoiding the head teacher generally.
Yeah, so I booked an appointment, which I think he found quite amusing, to be honest. And I just said that I felt fearful, and I felt that it wasn't a good place to be learning. And I asked him what he was going to do about it. And he basically said that there was nothing that he could do other than keep a lid on things, as he said. And I said, do you see this? And I pointed to myself, I said, I think I'm about £2,700 worth of money. And he just went, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm walking through this door and I'm leaving. I said, because that's not good enough for me. And I walked out and left college, much to my parents' disgrace.
I think it's so important. There's a few things that you said, Nick, today that are so important. Firstly, I'm assuming for you can correct me if I'm wrong, that college was probably in the 90s.
Yes, yeah. Early 90s, yeah.
So, you know, a different time to now that we're still facing these problems very recently. But I think the key thing that stands out from what I've listened to is that belonging and finding your tribe is so important to whether you flourish or not, and your enjoyment levels indeed in school. You know, you spoke so positively about when you really found your tribe in secondary school, and people who noticed you, wanted to work with you and support you, and then also where you felt so uncomfortable. But also back to primary, where you weren't in a tribe, you were just invisible. But to me, the happiest times of your schooling were exactly that time when you were with people that got you and you got them, and this is what I want to do, I found my place.
Yeah, and I think that is down to connection and relationships, and I think that is key to successful learning. I don't care what anybody says. I've got 20 years of experience in the classroom of knowing that when you invest in relationships and build real connections that are honest and truthful, then that's when people flourish and they do grow and they do learn. And I think that is the thing that I built upon when I went into teaching. And I think for me, obviously, the transition from primary to secondary was very important. So I've obviously made sure that is expressed when I was teaching transition in year six. And it's really important to me now as a wellbeing practitioner that I talk about that. I go into schools now and offer that service of talking about reinventing yourself and not necessarily reinventing yourself, but actually saying to the world, this is me, these are my values, this is what I am, this is who I am, this is what I'm about. And not being afraid to do that when you've perhaps been stifled or perhaps not seen as much as you would have liked in primary school. And I think, again, that transition from secondary school into college, of knowing what you're worth and knowing what you're willing to accept. There were lots of friends that stayed at that college and they didn't do very well because they didn't feel safe and they didn't feel that they were invested in by their, you know, their departmental teachers and stuff like that. And I think when you do find that thing that works for you, because I did go back to college, I went back to a sixth form, which wasn't linked to my secondary school at all. And I felt that the 12 months that I had out, although I wasn't in education, I used to work for Green Elsh's Bakery, which you probably won't know about because you're down south. But it's quite a well-known bakery up in Manchester. And again, I was a Saturday girl, and the manager acknowledged that I had a little bit more about me than what I was just doing, and invited me to go to the Reaper graphics department, and I was creating the graphics and making them for the shops whilst I was off. So it was another thing that I learned, and being part of a group of people that were, you know, in a department that were working together for one cause, if you like. And then going back to college, realizing that I think that taught me the importance and the value of education and how I needed to attain certain things in order to move forward with what I wanted to do. And I think it reinforced that that's what I wanted. You know, I think when you do have a break from what you've been working on, it either sends you on a different path or it reinforces the path you want to take.
And I think you said there about well-being and well-being in schools, and we talk a lot about well-being now. It's dare I say, it's a very sort of on-trend.
Yeah, it's a bit of a buzzword, isn't it?
But what worries me so much is that we still do things that go counter to true well-being. And you talked about being you and being happy being you. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. I think so many young people today struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in our day when we were in sixth form, we didn't have the additional pressure of social media and Instagram accounts and perceiving that everyone's life is so much better than ours.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I would have felt about that, because I, you know, I wasn't a confident child anyway. So how that would have impacted me. But what worries me about well-being is we talk about it and do counter things. But even as parents, you know, I was thinking as he said this, you know, things were running through my mind that we even as parents go to parents' evening, you go around from subject to subject in secondary, and mm-hmm. they're doing really well in this and they're great in that lesson, and then they're doing less well. And why are you doing less well in that then? And actually, is that not normal? We yeah. expect them to kind of come out on this level that they're doing equally well in everything, and of course they're going to behave differently in different lessons because mm-hmm. of whether they feel inspired, safe, they have a connection, but also just, you know, we're not all great at everything,
and I think
school pushes us to think we should be, and then we're always failing.
And I think when you find what you know lights that fire inside, and when you find that passion, you know what works and what doesn't. Whether you find that at 11 years old, 14, 16, or whether you're still looking for it in your 50s, you know, we don't even, you know, there's no, and I think that's the problem, is people put that time frame on things, don't they? You must know what you want to do. I know we've discussed about our children taking their options, and you must know where you want to lead that to, and you don't, and not everybody does. I mean, I wanted to be a drama teacher up until I'd done my degree. And I got invited back to my old secondary school to do 3 months work experience. So it was like the summer term. And I struggled. I thought, this is not for me. And I had a chat with the head of the department, and I said, look, I said, this isn't what I want. She said, but this is what you've worked for all this time. I said, yeah, but it's not what I want. I've tried it. I don't like it. And this isn't for me. I know that I've got to go with what I'm feeling. And I actually went to my Saturday job and said, can I enroll on the management program? I was going to be trained to be a clothes store manager. And when I think about that, it was weird, because I got married quite young. I was 21 when I got married. And I remember being on honeymoon, sat on the beach, and I just remember having a conversation with my husband saying, I don't like my job. And he was like, but you didn't want to be a teacher, and you didn't want to, what is, are you really unhappy? And I was like, yeah, I am. I said, it's not for me. It's not what I want to see myself doing. He went, well, quit then. Quit. I was like, that's easier said than done. I said, we've got responsibilities. And he was like, just no. He said, we haven't. Compared to having a family and a mortgage, we've not got that responsibility. Just do what you feel you need to do. And I went back after my honeymoon and I quit my job. And I applied to become a teaching assistant then. And that was
That's how the story unfolded.
Yeah, and I just think, wow. And again, it's that finding that belonging and having somebody who will pick up on that and invest. It was the head teacher of the primary school that was out that encouraged me to become a primary school teacher. Without her, who knows what I would have been doing.
So you've had some fairly influential people in your life, some of your sort of peer-to-peer support. Who do you, if you had to narrow it down, who would you say, if anyone, has had the biggest impact on where you kind of went in your life and who you are today?
I'd say it'd be Marcus Davis, my drama teacher, because I think I was perhaps most open to becoming who I am now at the age of around 13, 14. That was when I was realising what I wanted. And when you have somebody there that has belief in you, I mean, I used to go, you know, at break times, lunch times, we used to have like the green room, and we used to go and hang out in the green room. And we'd have conversations, the big group of us, we'd have conversations about, you know, what we wanted. It was quite, I don't know, quite grown up, you know, they had the common room, but we went to the green room, and it was talking about, I think we had more open conversations. And I think the relationship, the connection, and the fact that I felt seen and valued and heard. And these are three things that I talk about in all my work. You know, those are the three things that embed well-being, I think, in whatever department, whatever area you work in, or whatever part of school you're in. Mm. The valued, seen and heard. Because I had that from Mr. Davis and his team, it really made me think, and it really let me talk through a lot of things that I wanted and how I saw myself and who I was. And I think for me, those years, that it was like from year 9, 10 and 11, so 3 years of being there and having somebody who, you know, when things weren't going quite right and you needed a grown-up to thrash it out with.
Mm.
Although my relationship with my parents was wonderful, I had a wonderful childhood. There were certain things that I couldn't talk to my mum and dad about. I wouldn't want to talk to my mum and dad about, because you know, they had their own perspectives on things and what they wanted for me. Whereas it was talked through, and not, there was no expectation put on me and no judgment. And I think having that with a grown-up that can help, you know, build that belief in you. You know, it's like before exams, you know, like I remember going in before my French exam, before my French speaking and listening. I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. You can. Let's breathe. Let's do this. Let's do that. And it was, you know, that whatever happens, this isn't the end of the world if it doesn't go right. And having somebody that could say that to you at the right time, that you respected enough, I think is key. And I think for me, relationships embed absolutely everything. And when you have a positive relationship with somebody who you trust, it just makes a huge difference.
And the very last question I'd like to know, so I'm going to give you a magic wand now, but there are rules with this wand, in that you can change one thing about your school experience, but only one thing you would change for the better. What would you change, and why would you change it?
Wow, that's part of me saying I wouldn't change a thing, because I think everything that's happened to me has shaped who I am now, and I actually really love myself now. That doesn't mean to sound it in a really
in a positive way.
Yeah, I like who I am. I like what I stand for, and I love my values, and I love my outlook on life and my perspectives. And I don't think I would have got to where I am now without what's preceded me and what's gone. So I just think, I think if I could change anything, I would... Gosh, I'd give us more computers in primary school. I remember us all crouching around one computer. There you go. Because I really don't want to change anything, because I think it's part of who I am.
Yeah, and that's fascinating. So often we think, oh, I'll change that. I wish I'd done this. I wish I hadn't done that. Mm. But actually, yeah, all of those, even the challenges and the way you felt in your first sixth form.
Yeah.
Enabled you to think how uncomfortable you were in that situation, and how that you would therefore no doubt be an advocate for racial equality in the future. You know, you learn those things through experiencing the negatives and saying, actually, this is not what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's so crucial, you know, for resilience. We talk about resilience all the time, but we can't teach resilience without the negatives, without the bad things happening. And, you know, life is littered with lots of ups and downs, and we get that opportunity to learn from those situations, be they good or bad. So for me, I wouldn't change a single thing except put a few more computers in.
Well, on that note, thank you so much, Nicola, for your time. So it's been fascinating, always fascinating to go back and take people back to their school days. So thank you so much.
Thank you.